Hello, and welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans. I'm David Bailey, and over the past nearly 12 years, this podcast has taken on many forms, from interviews and audio diaries to cultural snapshots and expat reflections. You might notice some different podcast names mentioned along the way, but it's all part of the same journey, one that explores life, people, and stories from this fascinating region I now call home. If you're enjoying the listen, I'd love it if you left a quick review or rating wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps others discover the show. And if something in the episode sparks your interest or curiosity, why not drop me a message? I always enjoy hearing from listeners. I always reply.
You're listening to An Englishman in the Balkans.
Welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans podcast with me, David Pacinovic Bailey. In this podcast, you'll get a unique look at life in Bosnia and Herzegovina through my eyes, the eyes of an immigrant. Each episode, I share my experiences living in this often misunderstood country and introduce you to some of the interesting people I've met along the way. From exploring the rich culture and history to discussing the challenges and joys of immigrating to a new country, this podcast offers a thoughtful and engaging look at life in the Western Balkans.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you would like to support us and the production of future episodes, then please consider maybe giving us a tip or becoming a member of our podcast family. The link to do that is in the show notes for this podcast. Thanks again for listening. We really do appreciate it.
Hello and welcome back to the channel. This video is about spomenik, and spomenik is the word used for monuments across the Western Balkans, and in particular, the region of the former Yugoslavia. I'm David, an Englishman in the Balkans, and together with my wife Tamara, we document our lives together living in this wonderful part of Southeast Europe. We look at daily life and our adventures and cuisine. And, well, it's not a travel vlog, but you can also find a lot of great places to visit, especially here in Bosnia and Herzegovina. So if you want to subscribe, please click the subscribe button and also the bell to make sure that you're notified of every single brand new video that we upload. So yes, we're talking spomenik today. Some time ago on social media, I came across something called the Spomenik Database. Now, since all the years that I've been living in the region, I've come across some of these huge, brutalistic, heavy concrete monuments to events and activities concerning the former Yugoslavia. In fact, one is near me, about 40 kilometres away in the Kozara National Park, and the nearest one is on the hill called Ban Brdo, overlooking Banja Luka. It's an amazing monument, and apparently Tito, who used to be the president of Yugoslavia, said it was one of the finest that he'd seen. So I've been interested in these sort of like huge monuments, but somebody has actually created a database about them and has travelled extensively across the region documenting them. His name is Donald Niebel. Now, Donald, as you can guess from his name, is not from the former Yugoslavia or from the Western Balkans at all. In fact, he's from the United States. So I got in touch with him via direct messaging on Instagram and said, can I have a chat to you to find out more? He said, yes. So the other day, I caught up with him via Skype. He was in Illinois, I think. I might have that wrong. But anyway, I wanted to find out more about spomenik, about why he wanted to set up this very successful spomenik database. But first, let's find out a little bit about him. Who is Donald Niebel?
Well, I am a 38-year-old person who is from Maryland originally in the United States, and I grew up training to be working in environmental science in sort of in resource management positions, which I'd done over the years. I worked with the state government, local governments, federal government, doing various sorts of environmental management sorts of jobs. And I'd been doing that up until about a year ago when I quit to pursue this project of mine full time. And what this project is what I call the Spomenik database. It started in about 2015. I was interested in the monuments that I saw by in photographs by this Belgian photographer, Jan Kempeniers. And he had taken these very kind of artistic presented photographs of these very unusual looking monuments of which I'd never seen anything like them before. And I became very curious by them, intrigued by them. And in 2016, I went to go visit them for the first time after spending weeks and weeks researching them, trying to figure out how exactly do I find them, where are they located. And after going over there for several months between jobs, I was moving from Oklahoma to Illinois, and I had a little bit of time off between work. So I thought, I'll just go over there and see if I can find as many as I can. And when I got in through the process, I just rented a car when I arrived and just started driving across the countryside, typing in points on my sat nav and going from point to point, learning along the way, talking to people, having people explain things to me and translate things for me. And I came back and I had all this information, all these histories, all these translated inscriptions and documents. And I thought, why don't I just put a little corner on the internet of all of this material, just in case anyone's interested, and also so nobody has to go through all of the pain and trouble I went through the first time just to see these magnificent creations. And that's what I did. And then as soon as I had done that, I immediately started getting feedback from people, not just in the region, but all across the world, who were just captivated by what I'd put together. And I kind of took that as encouragement to go further and further. And that's what I've been doing since then.
You know, I spoke to somebody from the region here, from Bosnia-Herzegovina, not long after I found out that you created this database. And I said, I didn't mention that you'd done it to them. I just said, I'm interested in these. Is there a list of them somewhere in an archive in Belgrade or in Banja Luka or Sarajevo or wherever? And they hunted around and they said, no, there's not one that exists. Is yours the only one, the unique thing that documents where all these monuments are?
Even asking a simple question like that, you don't necessarily get a simple answer, because, I think that's kind of what frustrates people about the former Yugoslav region, is asking simple questions don't get simple answers. For instance, asking a question like, what language do they speak in Bosnia-Herzegovina? Doesn't get you a simple answer. Depends on who you talk to. And in the same way, asking a question like, how many monuments are there? Is there anywhere the documents, all of the monuments? Such questions like that are very difficult to answer in any sort of kind of authoritative way. First off, because even by the end of the Yugoslav era, there was no catalog of monuments across the entire landscape. Even let's just take Bosnia, for instance. Let's exclude the other former republics. Bosnia never did a sort of catalog. Even during the entire Yugoslav era, Bosnia never put together a authoritative compendium of every NOB memorial site that existed in that country. And as a result, it's not really known to this day how many existed or exist today. There are a couple, some of the municipalities have local documents for their regions, but some of other municipalities maybe had it at some point, but lost them over the course of the war. Those documents are long gone. So looking at just Bosnia, for instance, there is no complete record. And as far as the work I do, I by no means say that I have, that my website or the work I have done is cataloging every single one, because if you look at all of the former Yugoslavia, you know, some people estimate there are somewhere between 20 to 40,000 NOB memorial objects. So that would be a lifetime worth of work, if not several lifetimes by several people, to go through and catalog every single one. So my work is essentially kind of focusing on the ones that are charismatic, the ones that are most historically significant, that tell the most the story of the region in a way that kind of encapsulates the region as a whole, that, you know, objects that are architecturally, artistically significant, that are larger than life, so on and so forth. I try to kind of find a way to contain myself, because you can easily get lost in the enormity of it all if you try to bite it off too much. So I try to kind of contain what I'm cataloging, and also cataloging stuff that I think, you know, maybe international tourists or people from around the world might be intrigued by, or could lead them on a journey of self-discovery for themselves.
Most of the monuments are, and this is, I know, a wide generalized observation from me, but most of them are in the brutalistic, what they call the brutalistic style of that era. So it's like concrete on steroids, but some of them are absolutely stunning. And the one that I have yet to see in real life, as it were, is the one in Sudetska, this like large gateway in the middle of a valley. You know, when you show people that are not from the region these brutalistic designs, we in the West, for example, we like things to be aesthetically pleasing. You know, it's almost, I don't know, it's like modern art for us. How have you found people that you've shown this to who aren't from the region when they say, God, don't they look ugly? Or do they actually see something special in them?
I think a lot of times when you tell people that these are monuments, especially World War II monuments or monuments to massacres or atrocities, people in the West are often confused because it defies their understanding of what a traditional kind of commemorative shape is supposed to look like. You know, it's not something so straightforward as you know, other monuments, other popular monuments we might see other places, whether it be, you know, Holocaust monuments in Poland or other sorts of World War II monuments in the United States, or et cetera, et cetera. Often I think people have this initial kind of confusion upon seeing them, and then a fascination by them, because it's clear when you see these forms that there is an incredible amount of information that they're trying to convey, whether it be feelings or history or ideology or a sense of belonging or past. And I think people, many people, at least for me at least, have been curious to understand what that message is, to kind of translate this visual vocabulary into something that makes sense, that you can look at and it not be necessarily just a kind of like when you look up at the stars and you see nothing but stars and just unintelligible points of light. But when you start to, you know, learn about, let's say, the constellations or the universe, you finally can look at it and you can order things, make things make sense. And I think that's what a lot of people yearn for. And I think that's one of the reasons I've put together the database and the histories that I have, is so these aren't necessarily just, you know, these orientalized objects as many people in the past kind of interpreted them before I started doing my work, saying, oh, look at these weird things that these weird people did. They're more obviously than just abstract works of art. They're commemorative objects that encapsulate a, you know, a shared history for millions of people in many cases.
You mentioned that phrase there, a shared history. Going round and looking and documenting these objects, some of which are almost non-existent now, they've been destroyed or, you know, hugely damaged, to the ones that are still almost pristine in a way, with the differences of opinion, and I'm going to use this phrase, it's going to annoy some people, but it is what it is. There's a certain amount of revisionism happening in the region. For example, that orchid, I think it's an orchid at Jasenovac, where the concentration camp was, is some people now say it was only a collection centre. As you went round the region, what were the reaction of local people when, you know, you went around with your camera asking questions? Was it all just love and hugs, or did you have to cope with some hostility and negativity?
I would say that generally when I talked to local people and explained to them what I was doing, it was often met with most of all, just confusion. People couldn't for the life of them understand why someone would travel all the way from America to their small little village to look at something that had maybe fallen into neglect, or this sort of kind of neglected object from another time that maybe is cared about in the community, but they couldn't understand why someone from across the ocean would care to travel so far to see it. And that was often the very first encounter, you know, the majority of the encounters that I had with people. And oftentimes there were people also that, explaining what I was doing, they would be not necessarily aggressive, but very forceful in wanting me to understand what this object was, because I think they often would assume that I was coming from a place of absolute, ignorance as far as what this was or what it represented. And so they were very adamant to want to explain to me what this was, to put it into context for me in, you know, from their perspective. As far as, you know, kind of anger or any sort of meanness, I would say very, very rare to encounter anything like that. Although I would say that I tried to my best to be, you know, careful to avoid, you know, situations like that. You know, in going into areas that I knew were very sensitive, I would tread very lightly and do my best to, you know, avoid doing anything that might offend people or that might put myself in any sort of, unfriendly situation. So I think for the most part, I would say it was overwhelmingly positive, overwhelmingly, you know, just curious or excited and very interested to know why someone like me was there.
I published a blog post in the last 10 days about Day of the Republic, 29th of November, when Yugoslavia, it was their Republic Day. Some of the reaction I got from young people was, what republic are you talking about? To quite an outpouring on direct messages. Now, nobody put this publicly, but through direct messaging, personal messaging and everything else, especially on Instagram, a lot of people said, I miss it so much. Yes, it was a great day for us. It was one of the best holidays we ever had. To go back to those times, etc. So bringing it back to the young people, and for example, my wife's niece, who's now 16, has got no perception of what it might have been like. Grandparents only talk in certain ways about it. Some groups here think it's a betrayal if they talk about their history. The database, though, has got a part, in my humble opinion, in education for future generations. Did you see it as such a thing, or is it such a thing in your aim to be an educational tool, Donald?
Oh, yeah, I would say very much part of what I do is meant to educate people no matter where they are, whether it be in South America or Australia or in Montenegro or wherever. I get messages from people. You know, I remember one I got not that long ago from a woman in Slovenia who said that she knew about the monuments that were in her local area, but she had no idea how many more there were across the entire former Yugoslav landscape. And so even people that were from the region are often just amazed by the vast amount of objects, of monuments, of memorials, and all of their various forms and incarnations that existed. Because, like I was saying, there weren't often good compendiums across the landscape to show what there was. Yeah, there were a couple books here or there that showed the biggest one, the most significant ones. But, you know, there was no one resource. There was no one-stop shop to show you, the vast amounts of hundreds and hundreds of sites that there were, much less how to get to them, directions, photographs, all of the information that I provide on my website. I mean, a lot of the histories that I detail for individual monuments sometimes are the first time that histories about a particular incident at this location has ever been written about in English, or the author of the monument, the first time they've been written about in English. And so I try to do my best to, you know, reach out and find this information and make it accessible to people who might not otherwise have a way to locate it.
I assumed, and you should never assume, I know, in the English language, because it makes an ass out of you and me, but I was assuming that the Yugoslavian state had funded the building of these huge monuments, only to find, from my research anyway, very limited though it is, that the local communities foot the bill for these. And some of these communities are quite rural, very small, with not much in the way of income. Yet people are very proud. My wife, for example, says, you know, my grandfather used to haul rock up to build the one looking over Banja Luka. So when you were going around doing the research, did people reflect that they felt that this was part of their community, or had they forgotten about that in the mists of time?
I think it really depends on where you go, who you talk to. You know, the people in just about every community can have different feelings, remembrance, practices, you know, ways of looking at the past. And even within close proximity, I don't think, you know, you can't necessarily look at just one former republic or and say, this is the practice here. It really depends on almost on like an individual community level, how monuments, how memorial objects are treated. You know, they almost often act as barometers to how people interface with their own history. And I think that's a unique attribute of these, of the monuments, in the sense that they can tell so much. They act as kind of like a fulcrum to learn about not just the history of the region, but to learn about how people that still, you know, live in these communities feel about their own history, and how history, you know, the idea of history has changed. You know, what is memorialized, what is remembered, what is forgotten. You know, there's just so much that through the World War II monuments of Yugoslavia, so much that can be learned about the country, the past, the present, and so on and so forth.
You said that it could take 2, 3, 4 lifetimes actually to get all this documented. What's the plan for Donald coming back? Have you got more trips planned to come back to do more, or is it now just a pure academia that you have to take care of?
Oh, I definitely plan on coming back, probably in the spring. The last several years, I've spent at least, you know, somewhere between 1 to 2 to 3 months in the region every year, and so I definitely plan on coming back again. I have lots more people to talk to and meet, a lot of colleagues to interface with. I have lots of more monuments to see, and even potentially do some events, some talks and tours, maybe even. You know, just become this huge thing, almost like an institution in and of itself, the database that I've put together. You know, I get emails from people just about every day that are just so excited about the work I've been doing. I just got, just the other week, I was in D.C. Speaking at the embassy for North Macedonia to an audience there, and also at the University of Maryland. And there are just tons of people that are really excited and interested in this subject. And I think that if I can, you know, whatever I can do to help facilitate that, I feel like is a worthwhile endeavor.
I look at it as living history. As there are a lot of young people, and I say young people, let's say 25 and below, that follow some of the content that I put out from their own country, because they're absolutely amazed that an Englishman would, A, want to live here, and two, talk positively about it. Donald, what would you say to young people across the region as far as these Spomenik are concerned? Is it this something they should be following, getting interested in, or do you just say do what you want?
Well, I mean, I try not to go too much in far as telling people how they should feel about anything, especially as someone not from the region. That's not my business. What I want to do is provide to the people the information, the history, as far as I can interpret it from my perspective, from my research, and just put it out there for people to interpret as they will. I'm not a Yugo nostalgic. I'm not someone that's trying to advocate reestablishing Yugoslavia. Or I'm not someone that says, let's bring back communism to the region. You know, I'm someone that's trying to do this from a documentarian point of view that can say, you know, this history, you know, appeared to be, you know, dwindling, to be, you know, these monuments were falling into a state of forgottenness oftentimes or neglect. And I just wanted to, you know, photograph them, document them, say, this is what I found. This is the way things exist in this particular spot now. This is the history that I found through my research about what happened here, what this object commemorates. And I don't presume to tell anyone how they should digest that. This is simply putting out the, making sure the information is available to those who are interested in interfacing with it.
It would be great for people to have some pointers of where they can go on the internet to find the content that you are creating, that you are producing concerning the Spomenik, so they can do their own research as well and maybe stimulate them to meet up with you when you next come back. Where can people find the Spomenik information?
Well, the name of my website is called SpomenikDatabase.org, and I'm also very active on Twitter and on Instagram and on Facebook as well under that same name. So it is very easy to just type in those two words and find a whole array of outlets to connect with me through. And also I respond to email very readily as well, info@SpomenikDatabase.org. And I love hearing from anyone, no matter who it is, whether you have feedback or opinions or just input, critiques. I always appreciate hearing anything that anyone has to say because, you know, even as much as work as I've done, I feel like every day I'm learning something and everyone has something that they can share with me to help bring me a closer understanding about, you know, the region. I feel like it took me a good one, you know, maybe almost a good 2 years of just, you know, of reading and research before I even felt like I had a kind of even a cursory understanding about the history of, you know, the former Yugoslav region as kind of like a general whole. And I think it's so, you know, often when I'm talking to people about it, people say, oh, wasn't there a war in Yugoslavia? What was that all about? You know, you can't explain that to someone in just a few minutes. You could take weeks, if anything, just to give them a brief understanding. And so I encourage people, you know, just do as much reading as you can, because I think there's so much that can be learned, not just from the monuments, but from the region itself. Learning about the region through the monuments, especially in this multicultural era that we're living in now. Yugoslavia was among the very first multicultural experiments, and I think seeing how that all resulted in the end, I think there are many lessons that can be learned from consuming and understanding the history of Yugoslavia and what happened afterwards and how it exists now.
Well, I really look forward to catching up with you when you come back. I'm sure we're going to keep in touch, and it would be really nice to host you here. Finally, here's the question that I like to give people, one that might put you on the spot. Out of all the Spomenik that you've seen so far, what would you say is the one that means the most to you?
Obviously, that's always a difficult question. I think certainly one that is the most impactful that I hear people tell me that was for me when I first saw it, that many say was supposed to be the showcase monument for Yugoslavia, the one, like you were saying earlier, at Sutjeska, at the town of Tintista, Bosnia-Herzegovina, the one by Miodrag Živković, is just absolutely amazing to see it for the first time. But not only that one, the one at Podgorica in Croatia is absolutely unbelievable. There are so many other ones that I can think of to say, to mention. You know, there's certainly, you know, the one at Dražgorje in Slovenia. You could say Kozme in Serbia, or the Macedonium in North Macedonia. You know, so many unbelievable ones that I think I've talked to people who are some of the biggest world travelers, and they say exploring the monuments of Yugoslavia has been one of the most amazing travel experiences of their life. And so I just encourage people, jump into it and you won't regret it.
Donald, thank you so much for giving me your precious time today. And please, if you're listening or watching or reading about this, it would be, you just got to get hold of what Donald's creating and look at it and consume it. It's fascinating. Donald, thank you so much indeed for your time.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
That's Donald Niebel, the guy that has created the Spomenik database, and I'm hoping that he's going to come back to the region early next year, come and visit us here just north of Banja Luka, tell me more, and maybe we can do some adventures and explore together. So that's it from this edition of the vlog. If you'd like to subscribe, please do hit that button. Also the bell to be notified of whenever we launch a brand new video. And the things that we talked about in the video, the website for Donald, the link to the Spomenik database, etc., etc., are all in the description box below. So that's it. Until next time, stay safe wherever you are.
You're listening to An Englishman in the Balkans.
Welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans podcast with me, David Pachinovich Bailey. In this podcast, you'll get a unique look at life in Bosnia and Herzegovina through my eyes, the eyes of an immigrant. Each episode, I share my experiences living in this often misunderstood country and introduce you to some of the interesting people I've met along the way. From exploring the rich culture and history to discussing the challenges and joys of immigrating to a new country, this podcast offers a thoughtful and engaging look at life in the Western Balkans. So that's it for this one. Thanks for keeping me company. If you enjoyed the episode, maybe share it with a friend who might like it too. And if you've got thoughts, questions, or just want to say hello, you can always reach out. Also, if you'd like to support the podcast and help me keep telling these stories, you can drop a little tip via Buy Me a Coffee. The link is in the show notes. Even a euro or two makes a big difference. So that's it then. Take care, and I'll catch you in the next episode.